Hi, my name is Ben Armstrong.
Hi, this is David Koch.
My name is Thomas Maurer.
Hi, I'm Donna Sarkar.
Hi, my name is Lana Montgomery.
Hi, I'm Seth Warres.
Hi, I'm Aaron Thomas.
I'm Jess Dodson.
Hi, I'm Rocky Heckman.
Hi, I'm Sonia Cuff.
Hi, I'm Troy Hunt.
Hello, this is Wally Mead.
My name is Reid Purvis.
Hi, I'm Lars Flynn.
Hi, my name is Alan Birchall.
Hi, I'm Adam Fowler.
Hi, I'm Sky Guthrie, and you're listening to the Need to Know podcast.
All the latest Microsoft Cloud news, as well as industry guest deep dive conversations. It's the Need to Know podcast, all thanks to Rode Microphones. The Need to Know podcast. Catch us on Twitter and Facebook, NGK Podcast, and online at podcasts.needtoknow.cloud.
You join us again for another Need to Know podcast. My name is Robert Crane, and as always, across the other side of the internet, on another microphone, somewhere in a secret location inside the country of origin that we are speaking from, is Brenton Johnson. Welcome.
Good to be back, Robert.
You always seem surprised when I announce it like this. There's this big delay when you know, I build up to it, and then dead silence. Not expecting.
Yeah, well, I always think, you know, one day you're going to say, and this is Brenton's last episode, and I'm going to be like,
strange you should mention that. if anybody out there wants to replace, no, we won't do that.
There would be an uprising, pitchforks.
Ooh, yeah, the two or three people I know. Oh, yeah, they might be a bit concerned. Anyway,
yeah, I'd have to pay a lot of people, I reckon. But anyway, let's go.
Let's go. We've got more stuff to talk about. So at the moment, probably the biggest news that's current is Microsoft still recovering from a large data center outage in South Central USA. Very interesting to see what this resolution is completely once it has completed it or run its course. At this stage, it's still being recovered. There are issues displayed on the Azure status page. Microsoft is saying it's a severe weather event, a lightning strike that has caused some sort of power issue that has caused then overheating issues in the data center, causing what would seem to be a major outage. So as you would expect, when you get a major outage, social networks go berserk. Very interesting to see what the root cause and all this sort of stuff when it comes out. Now, the other thing we've seen today in Australia is ATP, so advanced threat protection issues around safe attachments when they're sent their scan by the ATP service. That was taking quite a long time to process attachments. So Microsoft seems to basically have come up snake eyes at the moment, hasn't it?
Oh, poor old Mark. Microsoft. Amazon got a beating from a weather event not too long ago. They had another one, Robert and I were just talking about in May, where an engineer uploaded something, and it broke something else. And I think what's happening is, particularly these big, realestate.com.au, these sort of guys, they run on two clouds. They run on Azure and they run on AWS. And then when AWS falls over, they fall over into Azure. And things keep going. So, but for the small businesses out there that perhaps don't have that sort of resources and rely on Office 365, I think we all need to be thinking about, well, how are we going to plan for those events? Because we know they're probably not going to be down for weeks on end. They're probably going to be down for a day, 2 days at the most. So how are you going to run your business when you can't log into Office 365, for example, or something like that happens? Because it's not necessarily that it's impossible, because, you know, the weather is the weather. So it's not even a fault of Microsoft.
I think the reality is anything, we know that anything involves humans is going to potentially fail. We've seen that. Hopefully it's getting less and less, but technology is very dependent on human beings to obviously run and write software and keep things running. And the bigger the systems they get, they can become dependent. Hopefully, again, the analogy is like the electricity grid. It works pretty well when it's moved into, you know, large aggregators. But again, local incidents, local outages can happen. How do you plan for that? So in today's age with technology dependency, we've still got single points of failure around, you know, services you may use and subscribe to, but also things like internet connectivity, electricity as well. And I think the key takeaway is to have a plan that these things hopefully won't happen, but if they do, how are you going to deal with it? So one of the examples I use is that if there's a loss of internet connectivity, for example, a backhoe goes through a cable outside your business and you can't get access to the internet, What's the process there? Do you send users to McDonald's and Starbucks or the local cafe to keep working? Do you give them 3G, 4G dongles? Do you send them home? What sort of the emergency procedure plan? So I think that's the encouragement here is that the best time to plan is before the event, not during or after the event. So again, a little bit of thought up front. And again, the reality is that no service can be 100% reliable. Hopefully it will get as close as it can, but that's going to minimize any downtime. And yeah, they're going to be inconvenience times, of course, but understanding and having a plan is going to minimize that, I think. So that's really what we need to look at planning. And again, from an IT provider's point of view, these things are always going to happen. And there's the opportunity for the IT professional to step in and say, right, you know, this is the plan, or this is how we're going to deal with it, or these are my advice, and this is what's going to happen. So again, these things will happen. We'll just see what the washout is with the Azure data center and some of the other things we've seen recently. But again, just because it moves away from on-prem to a larger environment, again, hopefully reduces the risk, but doesn't eliminate it completely.
Yeah, that's completely right. I think you hit the nail on the head. If you're an IT professional, this is a big part of what you need to be across.
Yeah, and I think, again, you can't abdicate this sort of thing. It's still something that needs to be understood, like backup and recovery and security, all that sort of stuff. Disaster recovery still needs to be done by the IT professional or reseller. These days, again, there are obviously a different focus. You don't need to focus so much on hardware, more on the software and the services and those sort of things, but there's still that requirement to do that, to be knowledgeable about it and to come up with the plans, the policies, the procedures on exactly when things do go wrong or pear shape or there are problems, how to deal with them. So with that said, why don't we turn to a little bit more brighter news? Hopefully we'll have something to more upbeat to report on that sort of thing when we come back on the next episode. But again, we want to keep this short because we do have a follow-up interview with Marcus Durbin on SharePoint adoption. So we want to make sure that we get to that with plenty of time for listeners. So just looking through some of the news that I'm going to give you, I'll pick one thing here. Basically, what Microsoft's now allowing you to do is a new file template management from a document library. So in the good old days, we had content types that allowed you to put your own template into a SharePoint document library. So when you went new, you could pick not only the standard blank Word, Excel, PowerPoint, but you could also pick your own template. Now, that was a little bit tricky to manage. You needed to be a bit of an admin or have the rights to do that at the back end, but Microsoft's now making that simple, upfront, and directly available from the menu for users. So that'll make it much easier for you to upload a standard document into a document library so that users can use that template to create new documents in that location. So we'll put the link for that in the show notes so that you've got access to that, but look out for that coming shortly to your tenant. Have you got any upbeat news for us, Brenton?
Oh, I certainly have. Last week we talked about, well, I didn't talk about, but I mentioned that I was going to talk about sandboxing in Windows 10. So we'll have the link in the show notes. But essentially, Microsoft, if you have the correct licensing, of course, and the correct hardware that can handle virtualization, will automate, spin up a sandbox to run potentially dodgy apps that will completely isolate it from the rest of the system. So I think this will be a really interesting one as time goes on, that we've really leveled out as far as the hardware concerned. You go sell the same hardware to everyone unless they have special needs. Now it's going to be like, okay, well, here's another security feature. Here's some bigger hardware you need to buy to run it. Or maybe we're all 100% in the cloud then and just have dumb terminals. Go back to the old days of dumb terminals, Robin. Who knows? But I think this is an important step in the right direction where you know, if you have a dodgy app or your users are trying to open something they shouldn't be, they can spin it up in the sandbox or you can spin it up in the sandbox if that's what you're doing without having to have a lot of technical ability or time and effort to do it. So. Positive users, step. What's your thoughts on that, Robert?
Users clicking the wrong thing? Nah, never it happened. They always do the right thing. Oh, we trust our users implicitly. I think that exactly. The indication here is that security these days is about behavior and all these zero-day stuff. A lot of the traditional methods of using signature-based systems, looking for patterns, really don't apply these days because the things are moving so quickly and morphing and changing and using all these technologies. So really, the best way to see if something is malicious is to actually open it. Now, unfortunately, we've relied on our users to do that. They've done a fantastic job for us. Unfortunately, they've created a lot of collateral damage. So if we can minimize that collateral damage to a sandboxed environment and go through the same process of actually opening it and seeing what it's doing, I think that's the way to go. And again, that's the idea behind ATP with Office 365. You send the attachment to a virtual machine that Microsoft has sandboxed. It opens the attachment, see what it does, make sure that it's good, and then if it is, it'll send it through to you. So I think, yeah, the sandboxing concept really is going to be the only way we're going to be able to detect a lot of these really early zero-day attacks, because we won't know unless we open it, and we don't want our users doing that. We want to be able to do that in some sort of sandbox to obviously protect them and protect the rest of the resources we have on-prem.
Yeah, and that leads into another Microsoft feature that's coming out, a new mass delete notification. You got more information on that, Robert?
Yeah, so one of the things that you see that can happen, obviously, in a SharePoint or OneDrive environment is that a user may maliciously or accidentally go in and do a mass delete of files. So maybe they select all the files in the document library, hit delete, and they disappear. They go to the recycle bin, they clean that out as well. That's obviously an activity you want to know about and potentially take actions on. So Microsoft's now going to give us the ability, I think he's automating that ability, and it will be the default that you'll get notified when there are mass deletions. You've been able to do this creating custom alerts, but having Microsoft roll this in, this also is on top of the Exchange one they're rolling in for anti-spoofing as well. So, and I suppose the third one they're going to throw in is the fact that all global administrators shortly will need to have multi-factor enabled. Microsoft will force that on them as well. So again, part of this is probably the stance that Microsoft's taking to make more tenants secure by implementing some of these sort of standard settings. Now, I would also say that a lot of these settings should be standard. You can set them up manually, but a lot of people just don't do it or don't get around to it. So it's good to see Microsoft again enforcing this, but I would also encourage you to look at the additional steps that should be taken. So one of the things I always point out is most mailboxes today don't need IMAP and POP3 enabled, so it's best practice then to go and turn that off for all your mailboxes and reduce the surface area. So there's a lot of things that can be done to make your tenant more secure. And again, I've detailed a lot of those in my blog and also the recent security course that I put online. So plenty of options there and stuff, again, for IT providers and IT pros to go in and start configuring.
Yeah, exactly right. Which leads into a good next step around passwordless login. So Yubico is partnering with Microsoft to use Windows Hello with Yubico security keys. So for those who don't know, it's a hardware-based security token. Google recently announced theirs, which is they call the Titan. I'll give you a bit of an idea of how effective a hardware-based token is over not having 2FA on. Google has effectively eliminated phishing attacks from their whole user base. They haven't had a phishing attack in a year or something since they made this hardware tokens mandatory for all staff. So soon you'll just be able to walk in with your key, it looks like a USB stick, plug it into your computer and you'll be logged into your computer. You know, you can still have the password plus the key, or maybe you use a Hello camera as well as a second authentication. But I think this is an important first step for businesses who, you know, are trying to make people more secure, but they want to use crappy passwords. Well, how about we get rid of passwords? And it's something Microsoft's investing a lot of time and energy in trying to do with Windows Hello and all sorts of other things. So really cool thing. I use passwordless on my Surface. How about you, Robert?
Yeah, certainly use the Windows Hello stuff. I think that's fantastic, the way that that works. And again, reduces your need to constantly log in. I've set that up for a couple of family members as well, because it makes it much easier for them and it retains that security for the environment, which is really what we're after. So again, lots of stuff you can do. A lot of it needs to be configured, obviously. So it's just a matter of looking at configuring that for your tenant. We might look to doing a deep dive on that in an upcoming episode. But again, I think we probably need to look at rounding things off so that we can make sure we get to the interview and allow people plenty of time, because we have been running a bit long of late. And of course, I blame Brenton for doing that because he just talks so much. So why don't we let people know how they can get in contact with us? They can do that with feedback@needtoknow.cloud. They can hit me up, @directorcia on the Twitter, and @contactbrenton also on the Twitter as well. You'll find us at @n2kpodcast on Twitter, @n2kpodcast on Facebook. And again, let us know what you think, what topics you'd like us to cover. We'll make sure that the show notes are made available for you as well, and look forward to another episode with young Brenton over there. Anything else for you before we sign off and jump into our interview with Marcus?
No, only one last thing, the quality updates thing that I promised. I'll leave the link in the show notes. There's not much to say about it, so maybe jump in there and have a look. But it's just an interesting look at how Microsoft's now deploying updates and moving away from WSUS and using some of these new technologies. So I'll leave that in there if you're interested and want to have a look. But otherwise, over to our interviewee.
I'm joined by a repeating guest here on the Need to Know podcast, Marcus Durbin. Welcome back.
Thanks so much, Robert. Just delighted to be here again chatting with you.
Excellent. Well, Marcus joined us in episode 185 to talk about some specific topics around digital transformation and a book that he had made available. But since then, he's become an author superstar, speaker superstar, and so much more. Your book, I believe, has done really well and is now out on Amazon.
Yeah. Look, just really delighted. Really, it's been great. So it's been listed as an Amazon bestseller in a bunch of categories, and that's a bit of a thrill. It's really fun, and yeah, getting to speak at more conferences as well, which is great. So have one coming up in Singapore. Just spoke at the Digital Workplace Conference in Melbourne, and that's really enjoying all that too. So it's been a lot of hard work with the book, but it's fun to get it out there now. It's enjoying it.
Excellent. All right. Well, you can think of this as practice for the audiobook when they come and ask you to do the audio version. So it's all good practice here. So why don't you give us a bit of a background on yourself for those who didn't catch episode 185, and a reason why they probably need to go back and have a listen to that as a context for what we're about to talk about here.
Sure. Thanks, Robert. Okay, so I own a technology consultancy called Webvine, and we play in the Microsoft space, especially around SharePoint, Dynamics CRM, Power BI, things, technologies like that. And especially I've been around intranets for a long time. I used to be intranet manager at Commonwealth Bank back in 2003 to 2005, and in a bunch of other places as well. So a lot of experience around that. And And something that I've noticed tragically through the years, and even working with a lot of clients, you know, for the last 9 years as well, we'd come into an organization and they would just make the same classic mistakes again and again, especially when it came to like intranets, which is now evolving into something we're calling the digital workplace, where, you know, a lot of effort might get put into creating one, but then there's not enough take up and there's not enough benefit from it at the end. Then I could see over the years that people were just making the same kind of mistakes again and again. Of course, they don't know because everyone's working in isolated companies. And so I decided that it was my responsibility to put this into a book and make it available to try and stop, you know, people from falling into that trap again and again. And in the book, there's a digital transformation framework of how to undertake a digital transformation in your organization. But also there's something called the 9 pillars of digital workplace success. And we covered 3 of those pillars last time, which were executive support, the right team, and information architecture. And today we'll get into some of the remaining ones of those 9 pillars.
Excellent. We'll also mention here that there is a discount code available for those listeners who want to take advantage of that and get Marcus's book here at a 20% discount. We'll save that to the end of the episode, so stay tuned for that. You can certainly get the book, have a read of it, and I think it's worthwhile. A lot of people who are looking at doing SharePoint and obviously the wider digital migration requirements these days, because it's very much a culture change as much as it is just moving files and folders, because this is the opportunity for a business really to reinvent themselves. So sort of speaking of that, I think that the next thing we need to have a look at based on your framework is this concept of a digital workplace. So I think that the question is going to be typically is, well, isn't a digital workplace somewhere that's got computers?
Yeah, it's really interesting, isn't it, Robert? You know, obviously digital transformation is getting banded around a lot, digital workplace as well, and there's a lot of crossover and understanding of these terms. So focusing on the digital workplace term, it's something that, in at least in what I do and what I've seen and studied over the few years, is that it's sort of evolved from, you know, having a typical intranet where maybe you have policies and procedures and a staff directory that's not very well maintained, to somewhere that, you know, you got a whole host of information about the organization, but also you're able to collaborate and work with people in the organization through this, you know, ideally kind of like a portal, you know, a central place. And we see that, you know, Office 365 and being a big part of that, and SharePoint Online being the center piece of that, to turn that into a digital workplace. Instead of having all these kind of siloed different applications that you have to log in and out of and go to, that you can have a kind of a more of a central portal, and where information is targeted to you. So if you're in HR or you're in London, you know that the information that you're seeing is relevant for you, and you're not seeing stuff that's not relevant. And so in the book, you know, there's a whole framework about how to create that digital workplace, and there's these 9 pillars to support that. You know, once you have it or once you're creating it, how do you make sure people are going to use it and change how they're working? You know, change their working style to be more more collaborative, more productive, more efficient. That's the end game.
Okay, so one of the pillars you've got down here is the ideal digital workplace. Okay, so I would suggest that you and I both have seen plenty of places that are very far from ideal. Yes. In the specific context here, this is I see this is sort of a common underlying thing that people are trying to get to. What's your sort of take on this paperless office? Because the reality seems to have been we added IT to a business to reduce the amount of paper, but unfortunately we've got more paper than we ever had. Now, again, one of the most, let's say, interesting things I see is when we go to a meeting or go to training, everybody brings their notebook, you know, their physical pen and paper and their notebook, and it says, well, hang on, we're doing a training session on OneNote, why have you brought all this stuff, sort of thing. So, you know, what's your sort of feeling on this attempt by IT or attempt by the providers to try and, you know, reduce the paper and get people to use tools like OneNote and SharePoint and actually make the information digital? Is it just a cultural thing that people are locked in saying, you know, I just feel more comfortable writing things down, I can see it, I can touch it?
Yeah, there's a lot in it, Robert, and that's why, you know, that's why I wrote the book, and there's a lot in the book, because unfortunately, you know, for IT folk, right, we're so used to technology and we love technology. And so any new tech comes along, we're interested in it, we want to find out about it, and we want to start using it as quickly as possible if it's better than what we've been using before. And so for IT folk, it's just a no-brainer. They just go, well, here's a great tool, just use it. I think for everyone else, they're not as passionate about that. You know, they don't really care as much about it, about the technology. They just want to get their job done. And a lot of people are definitely resistant to change. There's no question about that. And so the whole approach in how you roll out these new technologies is absolutely crucial. You know, it's absolutely crucial. And I think that the best approach is to come with a framework that focuses on the business needs first. You know, what do they need to get done in their day-to-day? Focus on that first, make it about them, and then, you know, start to bring in the tools appropriately to support those scenarios. Usually we lead with the tools first, you know, go, hey, use OneNote, hey, use this, hey, use that, and people kind of go, oh, what, why, I'm just using something else, it's working fine, I don't really want to. I think it needs to be approached from a different angle. And then they can hopefully see the possibilities. But there's a whole lot in it, and that's why there's these, you know, 9 pillars as well. And you know, number one, if you've missed it, I recommend going back and having a listen to the other podcast, because that's about executive support, and that's just really important. You know, like getting your CEO and getting your executive team on board with this transforming way of transforming how people work in the organization is so important.
Yeah, I think that one of the biggest challenges, or one of the things that have been overlooked, or where things have fallen between the cracks with IT, is that due to the pressures of IT and the growing requirements and the need to, you know, be upgrading, that IT people have generally been focused on providing the technology, getting the infrastructure in place, you know, getting the machines upgraded, putting the latest software on, patching it, updating it, securing it. And the reality is there hasn't been enough time or focus put on enablement for the user. So getting the user to actually use the tools. So the analogy I like to use is driving a car. You know, it would be very silly to assume that people know how to drive a car. Yes, they can watch YouTube videos and do Xbox, but actually driving on the street is a very different proposition. And, you know, training up front is going to make life easier. It's going to make it more comfortable. And again, there's going to be that greater adoption generally. But I think because of the constraints we've been under time-wise and also money-wise, we haven't, as IT people, generally dedicated enough time to training our users, looking at it from their point of view. It was a case of, let's get the job done, get the stuff in. You know, the users will work it out because, you know, we work it out. Now, as you mentioned, the digital side of things now is permeated the whole environment. We've got, you know, IT basically everywhere. IT is a utility. It's so common. But I find that the digital literacy is very low for most organizations. You know, they're doing things in a very, very haphazard way. They're doing it in a very non-structured way, and they're being very, very inefficient. So I'm pretty sure that many people, especially IT pros, have seen something like Excel used for word processing, used it for PowerPoint, used as a database, because that was the easy way to do it. So in this age of the digital workplace, is training, you know, because training is going to be something that needs to go on a regular basis. I mean, is that something that needs to be structured into this approach as well? So it's not just purely bits and bobs, but it's also, okay, we need to give users the power, the resources to either self-train or be trained on a regular basis.
Yeah, look, great question, Robert. And I think training is really important. However, I think the traditional way of training doesn't really work, not from what I've seen. So I've worked across organizations where, for example, when SharePoint was being in use and, you know, one organization just sent everyone on a team site training course. Now, they had hundreds and hundreds of people. It was a big, big organization. Go on these full day training courses on how to look after your team site. And they'd come back and they'd set up their team site for their team, right? And they'd put in a picture of people and, you know, add a little document library and do a few little things. And 2 years later, same picture of same people were there, and half of them have left. You know, the documents are 2 years old and, you know, totally out of date, and no one's using it. And so the reason, I think, is because it's just a bit of technology that they learned how to, you know, getting trained in a bit of technology, but not really understanding how to really apply that to their working day and their current situations, and then working differently with that. So I think a better way of training is to come in, and then it turns into more consulting, right? Like it's not enough just to be a trainer. You have to be more of a consultant to go, what's involved in your working day? What's your pain points? You know, what do you need to do? And they might say, well, you know, every Friday, you know, 15 of us need to collaborate on this report. It takes us hours. It's a complete pain. And the person's able to go, well, we might be able to use, you know, X technology to do that. You know, did you know you can collaborate on Word Online together or whatever it is, right? And that way they go, oh, no, I didn't know. That's really helpful. Now, once they're solving that problem and solving something for them, they're automatically more interested. They're automatically more motivated. And then they can start to think, oh, gee, well, we solved that. Maybe this will apply to this case over here as well. Whereas usually we just go in and go, oh, did you know you can co-author and you can do all this stuff? And sometimes if people are not really paying attention, they just don't really match the, you know, match the dots. What's that? Join the dots. They don't really join the dots. And that's one of the biggest things. And then they come out of the training, and you know what it's like. You go in for a training course, you learn all day, and then you come out and you go away for the weekend, and you come back Monday, and you've forgotten like 70% of it. So, you know, I think more than training is needed. But it is part of it, but I think a different approach to training is important.
And also, what about your approach? Is your recommendation, or in general, just guidance, is that, okay, we do the, you know, the most painful things or things in little pieces and we build up to it? Or is it a bit more wide-ranging? Look, we need to take a bigger approach and revamp this, and this will lead to smaller things. So is it a case of small things add up to big things, or we do big things that will cover our small things?
That's a great question. And look, if you can get the big thing, the big initiative, that's great, right? So if you can get the backing, that then goes back to this executive support. You know, that's one of the reasons why I wrote the book. You know, the whole first section in the book is geared towards that executive that's not that tech savvy, you know, and explaining to them like why this stuff's important. You know, like in terms of do you want to be able to attract the best talent into the organization? Like, do you want to be competitive and so on? And they're saying, yes, 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 we want to do all these things. Okay, well, then you need to transform how people work, and this is how you do it. Now, they don't care about how you do it. That's for someone else to figure out. But to get them behind the idea that they need to do it is, you know, that's an important, you know, first step. And so I think that's a great place to start. Now, if you can't get that, right, if you cannot start off with something big, then absolutely start off with something small. You know, get your quick wins, get a few wins on the board, and then showcase. But importantly, try and showcase that back to management to get the buy-in to do something bigger. Because it's hard to do it completely from the ground up with not much support. You know, it's hard in an organization to do it, and to do it kind of organically. And then next thing, you know, everyone's using something different, right? So let's say Office 365 is just available for everyone. And some people start using groups, some people start using Teams, and then Yammer is getting used, and all these different things are getting used. Suddenly you have more of a mess on your hands than you ever had before. So it does need, I feel, you know, a clear strategy. But does it have to be a huge thing? No, it does not. You can start in bite-sized chunks and build it up from there, for sure.
Okay, now one of the other pillars you've got here, apart from executive support, is the right team. So to your mind, what's some guidance around the right team? I mean, it obviously would seem to be someone who is passionate about the technology or keen to implement it, but do they have to have any skills? Do they have to be IT savvy? You know, is there, again, some sort of commonality that people who are listening could look across the organizations they deal with and say, you know what, that person would be a good candidate, let's enable them or empower them? Is there that sort of, you know, those sort of attributes that you can target?
Yeah, so, and we went into this in quite a bit of detail in the last one, in the last podcast, but just to recap, I think the most important element in the right team, and they're very hard to find, is someone who understands the technology but can speak to the business. And so usually tech people really enjoy tech, and they speak in a tech kind of way, and then the business somehow sometimes can't quite relate to that. And so you need to be able to find someone who understands technology and understands the possibilities but can speak to the business without mentioning a word about technology, and understand their pain points and help them to, you know, solve problems without getting techie. And it's a rare, it's for some strange reason, it seems to be a really a rare thing. So if you're listening to this and you have that skill, you know, you're one of the the lucky few to be able to do that, and you're in quite demand, because you know, finding good consultants who can do that is really, really difficult. So I think that's the key. Obviously, you need good developers, you need good technical people, you know, you need a range of people with skills, but that fundamental skill is lacking in general, and it's just really a really important one.
So what guidance would you give someone who's, let's just say, you know, generally a regular style employee, line worker or whatever, not necessarily management, but does have some say and influence over the organization, is relatively tech savvy, but can see their organization is falling behind. Maybe they've got Office 365, but they're just using email, or they're doing the basics that you've outlined. You feel that you've got the qualifications, the skills, or you've got the desire to, again, take on this digital transformation or help the business do this digital transformation. I mean, what sort of guidance can you give those sort of people who probably are a bit frustrated at the moment? They're not getting the results that they want. They can see all this great technology that's not being implemented. You know, is there an approach they can take, or what are some suggestions you would have for them as to, okay, what's the best way, again, to approach it? Do they, again, just target a pain point, solve it with the tools they've got, and say, you know, have a look at this. This is what I managed to do with stuff that didn't cost us any additional money.
Yeah, that's one way of approaching it. Look, and I've been in this situation myself. You know, I can totally relate. And it's very difficult. I think when you're working in an organization for some time and you all get to know each other, unfortunately, human nature seems to think that, well, that person, you know, your brain gets fixed and, okay, that person's like that. And they're thinking a certain way. And so people start to think that about the IT manager or the IT developers or technicians or whatever. And so even if they're saying something that's logical and valid, other people can kind of be tuned out to that. And a consultant can walk in and say the same thing, and I've seen this happen so many times. You know, someone says the same thing, but they go, oh, that's amazing. Yeah, we should do that. You know, it's stupid, right? But it's just, I don't know, it's human nature. So I think sometimes, you know, you just need that backup. Now, one of the, and I'm not trying to flog the book, okay, but one of the easiest ways is to just get, you know, get the book, get it in the right hands of a few people. They can have a read and they can get on board with the concept that way. That you know, otherwise, try and engage with a consultancy to do a bit of a short engagement around creating a strategy that everyone can buy into, and then that person can drive it forwards internally. So I would suggest, you know, it's not easy to keep on hammering when people aren't listening. So you just need a bit of support, I think, to open the door, and then you can move a little bit. That'd be my suggestion.
Yeah, I think you've got to stack the cards in your favor. The best way to do that is to put runs on the table, as you've mentioned, to solve maybe a simple or straightforward issue, something like flow or something that can automate a process to open people's eyes, or again, maybe create a team and then do stuff in there and use the bots and do the chat and then show the productivity benefits. But I think obviously the key thing is that whatever's done, again, you know, it has to be a ROI KPI. So you can actually say, look, this is the way it was before. This is now the way it is. These are the differences. These are the improvements, like typically in money terms, because that's what's common across most businesses. So I think, like you say, is not focus on the technology. Say, look, you know, here's the problem we solved. This is what it ended up saving us or making us. And that's a much easier conversation to have with, you know, those who make the decisions potentially. And I think that, again, it's just a matter of once you've got that evidence, then you're going to get that support.
Yeah, it's true. It does help a lot. And definitely we talk about this in the book a lot and in the framework, definitely. And still, people of human nature, and you know, they do tune out to people, so unfortunately, so it's just sometimes refreshing to get someone else in to say something, and everyone listens and pays attention. So that just a little tip that can actually help to help you to move along, or show someone a video of someone else saying something. You know, they just, if you drone on with the same message again and again, it can tend to just wear out over time and people stop listening. So you know, all of it's important. Yeah.
All right. So I think as we're rounding up here, and we'll give you the details to get access to the book at a discount before we finish off. But the last topic I'd like to, or the pillar that I'd like to focus on, and just get your feedback on quickly, is this one around governance, right? So it's very important. So maybe you can just let us know in broad terms what, you know, you would define as governance and how it fits into this digital transformation process. I mean, governance sounds like adding bureaucracy, adding, you know, onerous things over the top rather than this freewheeling digital world that we're trying to get to. So what is governance, I suppose, if you could define that for us? And then also sort of where does that fit in this process?
Sure. Thanks, Robert. Yes, it's a terrible word, isn't it? I mean, you know, firstly, it sounds like government, which is not, you know, at the moment anyway, not that appealing. But governance in general, like who wants to be governed and told what to do? No one. But, you know, if you don't have some structures in place, then you just have chaos. And that's what we've seen a lot over the years. You know, let's say, for example, over the years, it's been more around SharePoint, and SharePoint can turn into a sprawl. You know, there can be, I mean, we had one client that had 5,000 site collections. If you know what a site collection is, you're probably wondering, my God, how did that happen? So, you know, you can have an absolute sprawl, and then your search doesn't work and so on. And so governance is important to keep things in check. You know, you wouldn't let people just create as many email accounts as they wanted. You know, I think I'll create like 15 different types of email accounts for no particular reason whatsoever. So you just need to manage your digital workplace as well and your Office 365 strategy with some governance. And it doesn't have to be over the top, you know, it doesn't have to be some regimented like 50-page manuscript or something, but just some simple guidelines that are in place. But it's important that they're followed, right? So there's no point creating some governance framework document if no one ever looks at it again. So you need, I would, you know, suggest you need to really make sure that whatever you define is going to be followed through. You know, so let's say, you know, you decide that Teams are going to get used initially for managing, for, you know, people working on certain projects. And then you just ensure that they're it's limited to that only as a start. You know, you've got like 20 projects going on and you create 20 teams across those. And you just ensure and you keep check on it that it doesn't become, you know, suddenly there's 500 teams going on and it's all a bit messy and crazy. And so it's just some simple things like that, but you absolutely need it. You can have everything else in place, and if you don't have some governance, you just have an absolute dog's breakfast. And if SharePoint can become a mess, which I've seen it a lot, Office 365 can become 50 times messier than that. So you need a structure around it.
So yeah, I certainly agree with you, because it is very easy with these freewheeling tools to get out of control. So again, the analogy is something like a spreadsheet. Spreadsheet's a fantastic tool, but I generally haven't seen many well-crafted or well-thought-out spreadsheets. They all tend to end up, the bigger they become, the worse they become. So that is a good and bad part of these sort of technologies. And for those listening, my number one governance rule in collaboration is no cat photos, right? That is an absolute mandatory in anything business collaboration, no cat photos, right? Just subscribe to that and everything will work properly. So as we're rounding this up, Marcus, and we sort of give people a summary, is there anything that we haven't covered or any point that you really want to let people know about that you see as being, you know, the important things to cover?
Yeah, sure. One thing I think people miss all the time, and even consultancies miss all the time, is a search strategy. So people tend to use Google, right, pretty well, and Google tends to turn up with what you're looking for pretty well. And so they come into something like Office 365, and they search for a document, and they expect it should just be there straight away. And of course, in most cases, it's not showing up the right stuff. And that's because people are not undertaking a search strategy at the beginning. So they just start chucking in loads of information, loads of documents, and then it just can't figure out, you know, what's different than what. So a lot of documents would be called similar things and have similar content. So it's very hard for the search engine to figure out what it is that you're absolutely looking for. If you have a search strategy up front, you're doing things like figuring out how to categorize information. You know, you can do things like, say with SharePoint, you can have, used to be called best bets, that, you know, if someone's typing in a certain thing, let's say you have a leave form on the site, but there's a whole bunch of Americans that are typing in vacation form, but it's not called that. And you could put a keyword for the leave form to say, well, if someone's typing in vacation, bring up this result. So there's lots of different things that can be done. You could even have a data visualization of results, like a map, if that's helpful. And we've certainly helped our clients a lot with this over the years. And so search, I think, is just critical to the success of any digital workplace, and yet we just see all the time where search strategy is never thought of. It's just an afterthought. So that is something that I would really strongly recommend to figure out at the beginning. Again, with social technology as well, you know, like if you're using Yammer or something like that, then people tend to think that it'll just happen by itself. You know, so okay, we'll just turn on Yammer and everyone will use it. And it doesn't happen like that, you know. Either I've seen mainly two things happen. People turn it on and they expect users will just get into it, and they don't, because they're not really quite sure what to do or how to, you know, what to use it for. And it like that, or else they go the other way and there's a whole initiative around it and they create like 50 different Yammer groups and they think it's going to be the best thing ever and the team gets really carried away and then no one's posting anything anywhere. You know, so for me, if you're going to try and deploy social technology in the organization, you need to be really clear about how you're going to do that. You know, you need to have champions there who are going to post certain information. They have to have, there's a commitment that what they're going to post, when they're going to post it, who's going to respond. You need to get executives posting. If the executives are not posting, then the middle management are not going to post, and then everyone else is not going to post either. So it'll be frowned upon. It'll be seen as being frowned upon, that technology, and compared to Facebook and a waste of time and all that jazz. So there has to be a good strategy around the social technology if you're going to implement that, or else it's going to die. So there's a couple of things there. Document management. Again, I mean, this is one that's just such a pain, isn't it? You know, it seems to be so difficult to manage all these thousands and tens and thousands and hundreds of thousands of documents. It's just really difficult. Again, there I would try and focus on, well, let's categorize and make really clear the documents that people need to access, like, you know, templates, policies, procedures, and forms, things like that, where you can have the most current copy, you know, and have some good metadata perhaps around it that you can find it well. All the other stuff, right, the working documents people are working on in their teams and things like that, then I think, you know what, just stick that in folders, but just isolate it away from the search. So the search is not pulling up all these useless results, and you keep, you know, the kind of holy grail of good stuff clean, and that way people can find at least those documents that they're looking for. Again, it's not a set and forget, right? You can't just do a document management workshop and then go, all right, well, that's cool. We applied the structure and it'll all be good from here. Like, someone's got to review, people have got to check, they've got to make sure that people are doing the right thing, or else just very soon document management, the documents are a mess, and then the search is a mess. So unfortunately, it's a bit like planting, I don't know, working in a garden. You know, you can plant stuff, but you've got to look after it, right?
I 100% agree. I think that the way you've got to look at this stuff, it needs gardening. It doesn't need necessarily somebody tending it every day, but it does need people to go in and make sure that it is within the guidelines, that there are still pathways between there, the weeds aren't there, again, destroying what you really want to be using. And a lot of that, thanks to these sort of technology, allows you to delegate, potentially push that down, so it doesn't have to be the sole domain of IT. You can empower others to look after their area, look after certain, you know, information. They can be the ones involved, and that will give them potentially an opportunity, and also, again, they'll probably enjoy doing that, and you'll probably get a different approach than if IT was totally just looking after that. So, yes. Again, Marcus, probably the best thing here is, thanks for all the information and obviously your insight there. How can people get hold of the book so they can really dive into this in a deeper way?
Sure. Look, if you want the ebook, you just jump on, it's just everywhere really, but, you know, jumping on Amazon's probably good. I think it's on there at the moment for, like, Amazon dropped the price to $5 or $6. So that's a bit of a steal. So you can easily get the ebook that way. If you want to get the physical book, it's available on Booktopia, Angus and Robertson, Dimmocks, and a whole lot of places. If you want to get it directly from us, you can use the discount code, which is CIAOps, I think.
That's CIAOps.
And 20% off. So you just go to webvine.com.au/book and you can order it from there.
Okay, so I'll make sure that the link to that and the discount code are all there for people, but 20% off if you use the discount code CIAOps, and that will get you the book directly from Marcus. So I think that's really good. I think it's worthwhile, again, putting on the shelf reading, because it's good to get this sort of perspective, especially if you're not coming from a world that's familiar with things like SharePoint, collaboration, social, search, all that sort of stuff. It gives you that perspective for the business, if you're working with multiple businesses, and if you're inside a business, it'll give you some suggestions. And also, I think the important thing in all of this generally is a framework. That's what I see missing in most cases, is people are all gung-ho, they're all keen, but they all run in different directions. So having a framework that
Marcus has laid out certainly helps you, again, keep the direction, keep the development on track, I think. And I think that's where one of the big benefits is using these sort of frameworks to work within, expand it, improve on it. But having that just saves, you know, so much time of, okay, what should I do here? How should I start? What's the next step? So I think that's a big benefit of that. So I'll take this opportunity to, again, thank Marcus for his time. I will make sure that all the information gets up there on the show notes. But if people do want to get directly in contact with you or your business, Marcus, how can they do that?
Yeah, look, my email is Marcus, M-A-R-C-U-S, at Webvine, webvine.com.au. So you can please feel free to shoot me an email there. Our number is 1-800-022-990. You can call us, you know, and certainly hit me up on LinkedIn as well, Marcus Durbin, and yeah, just get in touch. And we do send out as well, if you wanted to, you know, get in touch, you can pop you on the mailing list. We run regular webinars and things like that, you know, really useful information. So, you know, feel free to join there. But thanks Robert, you know, love being on the show and chatting with you. So it's been great, really appreciate the opportunity.
And I like to think that the CIOps listeners have helped make you an international bestseller. So that's the takeaway that I'm going to have. And who knows where you can go from here. Next thing you know, you'll be on the Today Show and talking about your book. That's really when you've made it, when you're talking digital transformation with Koshy. So let's see if we can get you to that level shortly. So
let's see.
I'll take this opportunity again to thank everybody for listening. Don't forget to contact Marcus. Make sure you get in and get his book with a discount code. All the stuff will be up on the show notes for this episode. And again, I'll thank Marcus for his time and also his insight. But at this stage, I'll call an end to this episode of the Need to Know podcast.
You have been listening to the Need to Know podcast from CIA Ops. For training on using technologies like SharePoint Online or Office 365, visit www.ciaopsacademy.com. By purchasing from the selection available, you'll be directly supporting this podcast. To provide feedback on this episode, visit www.ciaops.com/contact.